The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight with Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right. Welcome, welcome, welcome to a Wednesday program, but it's a Wednesday that feels like a Friday because it's the 3rd of July. So, there's so much to talk about today. There's so much going on. In addition to all the news of the day, we do have a guest today. Joanne Reed will be here. Yes, Joy Reed from MSNBC. We actually go way back because, you know, she was down here in South Florida before she went up to New York. And I actually beat her out for a job. It's my claim to fame these days. Can you imagine if she had gotten that job? Maybe I'd be on MSNBC today or not. No, I can assure you that I would not be. Anyway, lots of stuff going on. But before we get to it, we've got to start with the funny. Today, it's another one from Don Caron and the Parody Project. This guy's prolific. And it's timely today because tomorrow being the 4th of July, not even going into what's going on in D.C., dogs freak out. My dog, Jackson, freaks out at fireworks. So by way of a public service announcement, take care of your dogs tomorrow. Make sure they're calm. Make sure they're feeling safe. Make sure they're inside. Make sure they don't run out and get lost, because a lot of dogs do on the 4th of July. Just love your dogs, okay? Now, of course, we know Donald Trump does not have a dog. Donald Trump should never have a dog because he's not responsible enough. So take this soup. Oh no, did I not start YouTube? Oh God, hold on. YouTube, I knew I was forgetting to do something. All right, so YouTube, sorry. YouTube, oh my God, hold on. It's coming. I forgot to start the stream. So YouTube is starting in just a moment. Now I'm going to vamp for a moment before I start the video, because I want the YouTubers to be able to see it. So I'm watching to see when YouTube starts. It's one of those days, you know? Okay, there I am. So as I was saying, sorry, YouTubers, I forgot about you today. It's one of those days. Just to fill you in on what I said. Busy show today. Lots going on in the news. Joanne Reed also joining us at the bottom of the hour. Should be interesting. Before we get to the news, tomorrow's the 4th of July. Take care of your dogs because they freak out with fireworks. That said, Donald Trump does not have a dog and should never own a dog, despite the intentions of this song, the latest from the Parody Project and Don Caron on the Nicole Sandler Show. Enjoy.
You might be a better leader with a Labrador retriever and not a demagogue. Take the time to walk a Yorkie, 'cause you wouldn't be so porky if you only had a dog. Yay. If a puppy on a leash meant you'd be further from impeachment, you'd change your monologue. With a collie you'd be calmer than your nemesis Obama if you only had a dog. We prayed they had you spayed, so you might settle down. Get us off of this merry-go-round. They'll do it free down at the pound. In a year from next November, we'll be free from your distemper and drain the swamp you clogged. the corgi like the queen. You just might not be so mean if you only had a dog. You would not be just a nothing with your head all full of stuff and your heart all in a clog. And then perhaps you would deserve us and even be worthy of us if you only had a dog. Could be you would have some honor.
Nope.
If you raised a Weimaraner.
Never.
With a better epilogue. Cause you just might have been nicer to Comey, Conan, Spicer if you only had a dog.
Well, there's that.
A troubleshooter would have you neutered.
Oh, yeah.
Just to keep your feet down on the ground. Why not get yourself an Afghan hound? They might be free down at the pound.
Maybe.
Things wouldn't be so goofy if you were to raise a newfie. They're in the catalog. With a trusty Irish setter, everything would soon be better if you only had a dog. You might be tender, even gentle.
Oh, no.
And maybe sentimental, not in a hazy fog. Not attacking other nations, but improving our relations if you only had a dog. If only we could make you see how badly you expound. We could fix it with the Basset Hound. And once again, they're at the pound.
Maybe.
You might be a better leader with a Labrador Retriever and not a demagogue. And the world would be merrier, so befriend a Boston Terrier. Please go get yourself a dog.
Now, let me just say, we don't want Donald Trump to get a dog. By the way, good round of applause for Don Caron and the Parody Project. Find them at parodyproject.com. Great video. I love the sentiment, but Donald Trump is not allowed to have a dog. He is not human. He is some weird cyborg creature from beyond who is evil. And so he is not allowed to have a dog. Although I do agree, if he had a dog, he would be a better person. Two more things, real quick. Again, tomorrow, 4th of July, please make sure your dog is safe because they freak out, especially like my dog, Jackson. And the other thing is, in case you didn't hear me talk about it already, I have been for the last month or so volunteering at the I live in Broward County, Florida, at the Broward County Animal Care and Adoption Center. That's where we got Jackson from 5 years ago. And it's really rewarding. There are so many amazing dogs there who just need a home. So if you're even thinking about an animal, and especially if you live in South Florida, get in touch with me. I will help you find the perfect pet. Okay? I'm there every Sunday. And while it's really difficult to leave them at the end of my shift, the work just with the dogs is rewarding. And again, there's so many of them who need homes. So if you're in South Florida, think about adopting a dog. I will help you. Okay. All right. So here we are. It is the 3rd of July. Tomorrow's 4th of July. I won't even call them festivities. I don't even know what to call them. The 4th of July is being usurped by a dictator wannabe. I'm kind of apoplectic over what is happening tomorrow. He's rolling out tanks. He's rolling out, military planes. It's just horrific. This is not what the United States is all about. Plus the fact that the 4th of July, the festivities in Washington, D.C. have always been apolitical. And this bozo is turning it into another one of his political rallies. I have more in my in today's What's News. In fact, you know what? Why don't we get to it and I'll include all the other stuff that's going on in there. There is much to discuss today.
I read the news today. Oh,
and we'll do it live.
We'll do it live. Fucking thing.
Okay.
We'll do it live.
Yes, fuck. Bill, I said we'd do it live.
We'll
stop
it
yelling
live.
Already. My God. Well, The Department of Homeland Security's Office of the Inspector General released a report yesterday confirming that overcrowded, squalid conditions are more widespread at migrant detention centers along the southern border than initially revealed. Shocker, I know. The report, complete with devastating photos, describes standing room only cells, children without showers and hot meals, and more. The New York Times ran some of those photos on its front page today. One senior manager at one of these facilities called the situation a, quote, ticking time bomb. When migrants detained in the facility saw investigators walking through, they banged on the cell windows, pressed notes up against the plexiglass to show the length of time they had spent in custody. One that we saw on the news last night said, help, 40-day here. In a room where people couldn't even sit because they were packed in like sardines. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was one of a group of lawmakers who visited some detention centers in Texas yesterday. Whoops. Here we go.
Today was unconscionable. No child should ever be separated from their parent. No child should ever be taken from their family.
Nope.
No woman should ever be locked up in a pen when they have done no harm to another human being. They should be given water. They should be given basic access to human rights. And it is a false notion. The idea that we have to choose between people is a false notion. No child ever has to suffer for the benefit of another. And I will never accept that argument.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Now, the House Oversight Committee will hold hearings on the treatment of migrant children July 12th. So when they return from their 4th of July recess, they're out now, out all next week, because they can. I don't know. July 12th. House Oversight Committee hearings on the treatment of migrant children. The committee invited the acting heads of the Department of Homeland Security and Customs and Border Patrol to testify. We'll see if they show up, because we know Trump administration assholes tend to ignore requests from the House Democrats to testify. By the way, hate talker Rush Limbaugh, still on the air. Who knew? He spent reportedly, I didn't hear it myself, but according to reports, a lot of time yesterday attacking Democrats, suggesting they are lying about the situation inside these migrant facilities at the southern border. Perhaps his most repugnant comment came later when he decided to weigh in on the migrants themselves. So he dismissed claims about them being forced to drink out of the toilet, quipping, quote, but my friends, I don't do a Rush Limbaugh. I don't listen to him enough to get down the cadence or the timbre of his voice. But just picture a fat fuck bloviating. But my friends, based on what we're told about the circumstances where these people are fleeing, maybe toilet water is a step up for some of them, based on what the left is telling us their homelands are like. Ugh. Okay, on to other news. Things have changed. My story reads, score one for democracy. There will not be a citizenship question on the 2020 census. The Supreme Court last week blocked the administration from adding the question, saying it didn't provide a sufficient rationale for including it in the census. Opponents of adding the question said it was designed as a Republican effort to depress response rates in largely Democratic immigrant communities. That's one way of putting it. But there's news on that front. Earlier, a few hours ago, the orange idiot tweeted, yeah, he's still alive. I'm sorry, but yeah. What he tweeted was this. The news reports about the Department of Commerce dropping its quest to put the citizenship question on the census is incorrect, or to state it differently, fake! We are absolutely moving forward, as we must, because of the importance of the answer to this question. So this fucking idiot is now saying that Wilbur Ross's statement yesterday that they are going ahead with the census without the citizenship question is wrong. Apparently, heads are exploding all over the White House today. But now we go to BuzzFeed News and Zoe Tillman, who, let's see, says, let me find... I got to scroll all the way down because this is unbelievable. All right, and she writes. It keeps going. Okay, so Zoe Tillman retweeted the Trump tweet that I just read, and she wrote, Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross yesterday, quote, the Census Bureau has started the process of printing the decennial questionnaires without the question. And here is what the DOJ told lawyers for the challengers yesterday, quote, we can confirm that the decision has been made to print the 2020 decennial census questionnaire without a citizenship question. And then she continues with another tweet. Just gaming this out. Per the Census Bureau, 95% of the people get the invitation to complete the census by mail. You can respond online, by mail, or by phone. Even if most people respond online, per this fact sheet, the paper form has to ask the same questions or it doesn't work. So if, in the words of Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, the Census Bureau, quote, has started the process of printing the decennial questionnaires without the question, that means the online form also can't have the citizenship question. It could, I guess, she writes, but that's not how this works. So, again, I'm reading from a tweet thread from BuzzFeed News' Zoe Tillman, because this is fucked up. You need to hear what's going on. The Supreme Court did leave the door open to adding a citizenship question on a future census, the next one being in 2030. Planning for each census is a multi-year effort, so in theory, the Census Bureau could press ahead in the future with trying to add the question in 2030. But, she writes, the president's tweet appears aimed at reports yesterday that the Commerce Department would drop the effort to add the question to this census. Again, this is something that Ross and the Department of Justice explicitly said, so it's hard to imagine Trump is referring to 2030. Then she continues, DOJ hasn't filed anything in court yet about the decision to print the forms without the citizenship question, but lawyers in the Maryland case say the government's lawyers confirmed to it the judge during a telephone conference yesterday. The judge asked them to put it in writing by Monday. Okay, so that's something kind of separate, but here's where that is going. U.S. District Judge Trevor McFadden. Oh, no, this is a different case. Oy, oy, oy. Okay, so I'll get to that McFadden case in a minute because it's a Trump appointee who's going to hear the case that the House, whichever committee, who's went to court to ask for Trump's tax returns. This Trump appointee is going to hear that case. But I got them mixed up. Hold on. So Judge Hazel is the judge providing over the Maryland census citizenship case. He has set a call for 3:30 this afternoon with lawyers in the wake of Trump's tweet, which contradicts what the Justice Department lawyers said yesterday. So this judge called a telephone hearing for this afternoon at 3:30 after the Justice Department and Wilbur Ross both said, okay, the Supreme Court weighed in. We're moving forward with the 2020 census without the citizenship question. This Judge Hazel said, not so fast. I'm going to hold a hearing on the phone this afternoon at 3:30 Eastern, which is just 10 minutes away right now. And to make matters worse, back to Zoe Tillman, the judge will not permit reporters to listen to this call per request just made to chambers. Judges in other courts sometimes allow the media to call in for the record hearings. The judge scheduled today's telephone call with lawyers regarding the census citizenship question case on his own and did not specify the reason for it per lawyers in the case. This is insane. And here's an addendum. From a transparency standpoint, it's not great that there will be back-to-back calls, one yesterday, one later today, between the judge and lawyers in the Maryland census citizenship question case that are not in open court. It's up to the judge to decide how to handle that. So, yesterday's call, by the way, because we were not involved in it and we got no reporting on it, it was off the record. So there's no publicly available transcript. Today's call will be on the record. So there will be a transcript allegedly confirmed by the judge's chambers, but reporters can't listen in on it. Then there's another update. Plaintiffs in the New York census citizenship question case have asked the judge to immediately schedule a status conference to find out what the hell's going on regarding Trump's tweet. The ACLU and the New York Attorney General's office say that Trump's tweet is, quote, not consistent with the representations defendants' counsel made to plaintiffs and a federal court yesterday, and that any effort to print the form with the question would violate the court's injunction. That tweet came 7 minutes ago. So this is still ongoing. What we thought was a dead issue, Trump just decides to keep it open. This is a travesty. This is sickening. And I guess we have to wait and find out how it plays out. Again, this telephone hearing is scheduled for 10 minutes from now, but no reporters will be on the call because the judge said no, even though it's an on-the-record hearing. Makes no sense. Now, the other story that it really is a massive clusterfuck. Yes, I'll say the word, even though you won't in the chat room. Or maybe it's YouTube censoring you guys and you're writing out clusterfuck and it's just showing cluster, asterisk, asterisk, asterisk. I don't know. Doesn't really matter. We know what you mean. And it's true. It is a massive clusterfuck. It's unbelievable. Now, the other story that I was talking about, the House Ways and Means Committee finally filed a lawsuit yesterday against the Treasury Department in its latest push to obtain Donald Trump's tax returns. The panel, headed by Chairman Richie Neal, who's got to be a blue dog or a new Dem or both, he finally filed a complaint against the department and the Internal Revenue Service in federal court in Washington yesterday, asking the court to order the defendants to comply with Neal's subpoena and a section of the federal tax code. Here's the issue now. So they're suing, right? And a judge has been chosen. The judge is U.S. District Judge Trevor McFadden, as I was saying before, who was appointed by Donald Trump, who was confirmed by many of the Democrats in the Senate. In fact, Dave Johnson, who is a regular guest on this program, did a little tweet earlier today naming all of the Democratic senators who voted to confirm this guy. McFadden recently was in the news for rejecting Democrats' challenge to Trump's plan to pay for the border wall. I'm just pausing for dramatic effect to let that sink in. We are so fucked. In other news, Donald Trump is getting his big military parade through the streets of D.C. after all. This, too, is just unbelievable. Washington is prepping for the military-themed 4th of July celebration, but many worry, here's the understatement of the day, that it will devolve into a partisan political event. Oh, my God. Trump will break with tradition and deliver a speech in front of the Lincoln Memorial, inserting himself into the Independence Day festivities that have remained apolitical for decades. The White House has been distributing VIP tickets to Republican donors and political appointees, the RNC, the Republican National Committee, and Trump's reelection campaign confirmed yesterday that they had received passes that they were handing out for the event. As for the Democrats, they didn't get any tickets. But Kellyanne Conway said, it's a public event. Everyone can come. Bitch. Meanwhile, the National Park Service has diverted $2.5 million in park fees that go to maintain the parks for his ridiculous 4th of July masturbatory exercise. The diverted park fees represent just a fraction of the extra costs the government faces as a result of the event, which will include displays of military hardware, flyovers by an array of jets, including Air Force One, which actually won't be Air Force One because the president won't be on it, the deployment of tanks on the mall, oh my God, and an extended pyrotechnics show. By comparison, according to former Park Service Deputy Director Dennis Galvin, the entire 4th of July celebration on the mall typically costs the agency about $2 million. The $2.5 million they're stealing from the Parks Department won't even cover the extra expense of this spectacle. Now, in case you were wondering, the diaper-wearing 18-foot-high baby Trump blimp will be there. Though the restrictions placed on it are ridiculous. Code Pink, yes, our friends at Code Pink went through the process of getting the permits to have the balloon present between 4 a.m. and 9 p.m. on July 4th on a section of the National Mall near the Washington Monument. However, the permit states that, quote, all balloons are prohibited on the National Mall, but that the service would allow the Trump balloon to be present if it adhered to certain conditions, including being filled with cold air only, I guess meaning no helium, and unable to achieve flight, end quote. In a statement, Medea Benjamin, co-founder of Code Pink, said that, quote, it is not in the location we requested, within the line of sight of the Lincoln Memorial where the president will be speaking. According to the statement, the group had requested to fly the balloon on the large empty expanse at the base of the Washington Monument that would not have obstructed anyone's view, but would have allowed the president to see the baby. You know, the baby. Quote, it is ironic that it is right here in the land of the free that the balloon is being grounded. That from Medea Benjamin in a statement. Somehow, knowing that it's Code Pink with the balloon, I think we'll see it. Yeah. See, cold air, it won't rise. The balloon won't rise. I mean, cold air as opposed to hot air, but it's not a hot air balloon. The hot air wouldn't make it rise anyway. But I guess they're saying no helium. That said, helium is, I guess, in demand these days. I don't know. Yeah, I say we accidentally lose control of the balloon and watch it drift into his line of sight. Problem is, with cold air, it won't rise. But maybe they can sneak a little bit of helium into there. All right. In a few minutes, we're going to be joined by Joyanne Reed. Now, she's calling us. So I'll keep going with some of the news, other news stories that I pulled. But when the phone rings, we'll just head over to Joyanne Reed. I just so you know, I really hate when guests call in because I feel like I'm not in control. I'm sitting waiting for the phone to ring, but it is what it is. So I spent much of the day today reading her book. It's interesting. Those of you, you know, regular listeners of the show know that I have a problem with MSNBC and their pundits and personalities who have been so, how do I put it, unfair, critical, and downright horrible to Bernie Sanders. So, I'm going to have to deal with that issue. In fact, going through the book today, right off the bat, she badmouths Bernie Sanders. So I will question her on that. Again, I have a problem with the way her channel treats Bernie Sanders. But the publicist who booked her on the show made it a point to say, please to stick to the book. So we will. I'll be nice. As nice as I can be. All right. So while we're waiting for Joyanne Reed to call in, let me tell you a couple of other things happening that are just, in the news that you should know about. This is interesting. Here's an interesting fact. The president tweeted negatively about the news media 25 out of the 30 days in June. The most for a single month during his presidency so far, according to the U.S. Press Freedom Tracker. From Trump's inauguration through the end of last month, Donald Trump posted 791 negative tweets about the media in 893 days. Since announcing his candidacy for the presidency in June of 2015, Trump has tweeted negatively about the press 1,537 times in 1,477 days, a technique that appeals to the base of his supporters. The tracker does not include public remarks Trump frequently utters about fake news, the enemy of the state, and his challenges devoid of any corrections about reporting he doesn't like. For example, he told the president of Poland at the White House on June 12th that, quote, much of the media, unfortunately, in this country is corrupt. I have to tell you that, Mr. President. We know it's a lie. All right. Okay, so what else? There's a story in the Wall Street Journal today that says that the Equal Rights Amendment could soon be back before Congress. Yeah. And if you notice me looking over, actually, I've got the pot on my mixing board turned up a little bit. So when Joy calls in, we'll hear it ring. But I don't want to miss her call. Anyway, ratification from a 38th state, which is all we need to ratify the ERA, now appears more likely after the high court upheld a Virginia legislative map replacing a gerrymander. Earlier this year, an effort to ratify the amendment failed by a single vote in the Virginia State House. That could change now. So what they write is action in Virginia would thrust the issue back on Congress, where lawmakers would consider whether to extend or remove the ratification deadline. When the ERA was passed by both the House and Senate in 1972, Congress gave the states a 1979 deadline, later extended to 1982 to ratify it. Legislation from Congresswoman Jackie Speier in California eliminating the deadline is expected to pass the House, which is led by Democrats, easily. But and there's Joy calling. But bipartisan legislation from Senators Ben Cardin and Lisa Murkowski likely faces obviously a tougher fight in the Republican-led Senate. Okay, so I hear from the sound my phone is making that our guest is on the line. Now, Joyanne Reed, we know from, she's the host of AM Joy, weekend mornings from 10 to noon on MSNBC. And she's the author of a brand new book that I'm dutifully holding up for the camera called The Man Who Sold America, Trump and the Unraveling of the American Story. Hey, Joy.
Hey, great to talk to you, Nicole. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you doing?
Oh, you know, surviving the apocalypse.
I hear you. It's been a long time. What maybe listeners might not know is that you were down here. Oh, hold on. I think I don't have audio on the shot. This is the problem when you're your own producer. So Joyanne Reed is with us. Sorry, YouTubers. I'm fixing the audio on your shot now. You're from Miami. You're from Denver, but you lived in Miami before you went, excuse me, to New York for this MSNBC job. You're now officially a New Yorker?
I'm sort of from three different places. I mean, I was born in New York and then grew up in Denver, Colorado from age 2 to age 17, back to New York. And then my husband and I lived in Fort Lauderdale, or not Fort Lauderdale, but in South Florida, in the area around South Florida, for 14 long years.
Wow. And they are long years down here. South Florida, as we know, South Florida politics are kind of crazy, and it's its own little sort of microcosm of world insanity down here in Florida. But we're not here to talk about Florida politics today. We're here to talk about the insanity on the national stage with Donald Trump and your new book, The Man Who Sold America. Nirvana reference, or is that just incidental to the story?
It's a reference to a David Bowie song. I'm a huge David Bowie fan.
Okay.
And it's a reference to The Man Who Sold the World, which is a great David Bowie song.
Gotcha. I agree. Was it hard to write a book about Donald Trump after living with him for all this time? I mean, you don't know this because we haven't spoken in a long time, but I went through a real meltdown. I had a breakdown, basically, after Donald Trump was elected, where I just, my mind couldn't reconcile the reality that America elected this man. And the news reports were making, and I'm not alone here, a lot of people suffered real psychological anguish with the election of Donald Trump, me among them. Was it hard to then throw yourself fully into writing this book about the first 2.5 years of his presidency?
Oh, for sure. I mean, having to live, you know, kind of daily with him anyway, for work, I kind of sort of had to double down on, you know, the amount of Trump kind of in my brain at any one point. But I wanted to do it because covering him, and I'm sure that you experience this, you know, being on the radio, dealing with him daily, is that so much is happening, and it's happening so constantly, and he's constantly throwing out new bad things, that the things he's doing, it's hard to keep them all in mind. So I kind of wanted to have a history just so that it didn't all go down the memory hole. But I thought it was important to do it just because I wanted to remember it all. And I was hoping to create one of the books that would let people just remember all of this happened, you know, so that he couldn't later be kind of whipped into kind of a, you know, a George Herbert Walker Bush kind of, right, you know, sort of interesting president, but not what he is now.
Although that seems to be on some fronts happening, at least I think the corporate mainstream media, and I will include the New York Times and the Washington Post in here, seem to not want to offend him too much because they don't want to lose access, is my reasoning why they don't want to offend him. I mean, even to where they wouldn't call a lie a lie. It seems like they're bending over backwards to not make everything they print about him negative. Although, in, you know, if they're going to cover the news in a factual way, most of the coverage is going to be negative.
Yeah, you know, I interviewed, you know, I did a whole chapter on the media in the book where I confront that. And the reality is I spoke with, you know, media critics who, you know, are pretty harsh on the way that the media has covered Donald Trump, including mm-hmm. Jay Rosen at NYU, whose criticism has been that, you know, Donald Trump he's really benefiting from a media culture that really goes all the way back to the McKinley era, you know, when McKinley, who was, of course, the president who got us into the Spanish-American War, brought the press from outside inside the White House and said, you know, give them a space instead of having them outside waiting to see who came outside. And the quote that he gave me is that giving them a space was the first step to co-opting them. Mm-hmm. Right. So now mm-hmm. you're sort of almost working together. And this weird party that was thrown for Sarah Huckabee Sanders, I think, is an extreme version of it, where people see themselves as working together with the White House press secretary. And so the adversarial nature of the relationship kind of falls away when you're all, you know, having drinks together and you're kind of part yes. of the same weird team,
yeah,
you know?
I
think that's been a challenge with American media. That's not like that in Britain, for instance. If you go to Britain, the press is brutal about their politicians. Hmm. I mean, brutal. But I think they get a lot more real, the benefits of an adversarial press, you get more benefit the more adversarial it is because they're willing to go after them. I think also the other thing Trump benefited from is 40-something years of the right pounding the media and insisting that the media is liberal and is anti-Republican.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, journalists are very nervous. They don't want to feel that they seem anti-Republican. They don't want to be viewed as anti-Republican. So I think they tend to overcorrect when it comes to Republican leaders about being extra deferential.
I think you're right. And it's frustrating for those of us out here as news consumers hearing them what seems like normalizing him. I understand they feel like they're doing their jobs and they're just trying to cover him and not, you know, get on the wrong side of the administration. It's got to be a tough, tight rope to walk. But it's still frustrating seeing. I mean, just today, yesterday, we're kind of celebrating that Wilbur Ross agreed that the census, 2020 census, was going to go forward without the citizenship question as the Supreme Court decided it should. And today, Donald Trump tweets out that it's fake news, that he is indeed still challenging it. And then some judge says he's holding a telephone hearing actually right now as we speak. That this stuff shouldn't be happening, should it?
It should not. And you know, Donald Trump has warped pretty much everything about the way that the American media works. And he's really getting away with it. I mean, at this point, he's getting away with it all.
Yeah.
And I think part of the problem is, and I interviewed a lot of, you know, really smart constitutional lawyers. And, you know, I think they all agreed that the American system was not built for a Trump, that there was no anticipation. Remember, when this country was built, the only people who could even be president were people who were landed white, very wealthy men, all from the same class.
Mm-hmm.
And so they always assumed that every president would be like them. And I don't think the founders of the country anticipated a populist elected government, because our government isn't produced to produce a populist elected government. The Hamiltonian system that we have limits the access of the, you know, fervent body politic toward directly putting someone in power. Because as we've seen all over the world, when you allow a very, you know, sort of populist access, the more populist it is, the more you get a Trump. And so, you know, they put in all these fail-safes they thought would keep us from ever getting a demagogue or a king. They were very worried about America falling to a king and having a king again. And they tried to do things to prevent it. But I don't think that they ever anticipated that we would ourselves kind of deteriorate our democracy to the point where we'd have A, minority rule, which is what we have now, and B, hyper-partisanship, wherein if one party got control of enough of the government, they could rule it even if they are the minority. And that's what Republicans are. So we have a minority rule government that's on its way toward an autocracy. Americans don't really understand that necessarily because they think, though, that can't happen to us. We're America. We're exceptional. But it turns out we're not. We're just like every other country. We can have a populist, demagogue, autocrat, kleptocrat, just like any other country.
Yeah, and we do. We do. Joy-Ann Reid is with us. She's got a new book out. It's called The Man Who Sold America, Trump and the Unraveling of the American Story. We were talking about the media. And in fact, that's what I'm up to in your book. You have a chapter on media in the Trump age. Obviously, I was looking forward to that chapter because I've worked my entire adult life in the media. I don't even know where to go with this. I mean, you write a lot, of course, about Fox and the history of Fox News. Then you go into Sinclair Broadcasting, which is something that everyone should be really scared of because, as you point out in the book, Joy, Fox, you know, is Fox. It's got the logo there. They are who they are. They're not fair and balanced anymore, but they're still, you know, we make shit up. That's Fox News. Sinclair Broadcasting is a network, as it were, of local television stations around the country that are affiliates of the networks. So they will have their local news on with an ABC or an NBC or CBS or Fox logo when they're not owned by those. They're owned by Sinclair Broadcasting, who has sent down a message from up on high that you will push our editorial content and present it as if it's news when it is this virulent anti-democratic, pro-Trump ideology that is frightening, and people think it's their local news who they inherently trust.
Yeah, and I think one of the bigger themes of what I wrote about, you know, for this book is that what you see publicly with Trump, which is that he seems to be out there in, you know, the way they're selling it, fighting for the ordinary white man. The ordinary white Christian man, he's fighting for him. What Trump really is doing is fighting for the very, very rich.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people far richer than he's ever been. And people who have always wanted control of the country. They've always wanted to pay as little tax or no tax as possible. They want to have as much as they can grab, and they want more and more and more, and they want the rest of us to have less and less and less. Because in their minds, they deserve it. They've always had this challenge of how do they get ordinary people to go along with that? How do you get regular people to fight for the rich? They've always tried different things. There's been compassionate conservatism where they pretend that their goals are really to help the poor.
Right.
They want to take from them to make them better people, to make them stand up morally, that they've said it's moral hazard to help them too much. That didn't work so well. That's the Paul Ryan version that tended to get rejected because he would say, you know, and by the way, to help you, I'm going to take away your Medicare.
Right.
I'm going to privatize your Medicare and your Social Security and helping rich people get really rich by investing the Social Security fund is going to somehow help you. Well, people said, BS, you can't do that. They've tried the George W. Bush version, which is that they put a friendly guy and they say he's somebody you can have drinks with. Yes, yes, yes. He's very rich and he's the son of a president, but he really is like you. Like if he was sitting in a bar with you, you could get along with him. Try that. Well, he did manage to use that and a lot of tricks in Congress to pass these massive tax cuts that gave pretty much everything to the rich. He got away with that twice. So that can work. What he also did was he sort of bamboozled people with lots and lots of, you know, to be blunt, anti-gay laws.
Mm-hmm.
He got reelected by 11 different states putting in promises to end the opportunity for gay people to get married. And that kind of kept religious right people in his camp. And until the bottom fell out of the economy because those two tax cuts pretty much destroyed the economy. The natural result happened. And then people were like, oh, we don't want that anymore. And they went to Obama. What Donald Trump has managed to do is he's managed to say, look, white American Christians, I'm just going to give you the country back. How about that? I'm going to deport all the Muslims I can get my hands on. I'm going to deport all the brown people I can get my hands on. Don't worry. I know the census says you're going to be the minority, but I'm going to deport so many people and make their lives so miserable. I'm going to show you their misery and let you enjoy their misery. I'm going to create a Roman Colosseum out of America. I'm going to entertain you with their misery. And then I'm going to open it up for you to be able to say what you want to women. You want to say what you want to black people you don't want in the pool. I'm opening the country back up to you. I'm giving it back to you.
Yeah.
The culture is yours again. Say what you want. Do what you want. It's your country. You don't like the idea that women are equal to you? You don't have to treat them as equal. I don't. Look at the way I speak to women. Or 22 women accuse me of, you know, sexual assault or et cetera, and even one openly accused me of rape. Doesn't matter. You don't have to believe them. You need to believe me. Look at Brett Kavanaugh. He's on the court. So what he's doing is he's resetting the country back to the way about a third of the country wants it to be. And as long as he does that, they don't care if he shuts their farms down with his trade wars. They don't care if he ruins their economic condition by fighting needless wars with China and other countries. They don't care because he's giving them bread and circuses. And the bread and circuses, unfortunately, hurt us.
Yes. And you know, I am hearing those occasional interviews with someone who says, yeah, I screwed up. I should never have voted for him. That won't happen again. But you also hear these farmers who go, yeah, he's hurting me, but that's okay. I'm going to vote for him anyway. It just defies credulity. It just makes no sense whatsoever. But then so many things about life in the Trump era make no sense. Joy, the first chapter of your book is How Did Trump Happen? And it was a kind of the perfect storm. How did all the polls get it wrong? How did all the pundits get it wrong? I mean, there were a few people here and there who said, watch out, Trump's going to win. Michael Moore, one of them. But everyone believed Hillary Clinton would just get elected because no one could actually believe that Donald Trump could win the presidency.
Well, I think that the polls actually didn't get it wrong. Hillary Clinton's popular vote victory was about what the polls said. They're very close to the overall victory that she did have. She won by more than 3 million votes. So the polls weren't wrong about the popular vote. What the polls didn't take into account were where the votes would be and how far the Electoral College system has warped our democracy to where we've now had multiple occasions where the person who wins fewer votes becomes the president. Because we now essentially have minority rule. I think we didn't take that into account. I think the Clinton people didn't take into account that they could lose those three states, those three critical states, for so many reasons, 40-something years of, you know, the building up of hatred of her, just the presumption of her team that she would get all of Barack Obama's votes and be able to add Arizona, like the stuff they were doing at the end, where I think that they thought they were just going to add to Obama's total. Well, you're not Barack Obama, so you have to presume you start from somewhere else. Not paying enough attention to what Russians were actually doing. What they were doing was not so much flipping votes in his favor, although there's a new study that's out today that shows that the more that these bots would send out information and tweet and put things out in social media, it would actually increase his poll numbers. But at the same time, what they did was they just constantly particularly lived in particularly African-American social media feeds to get people to disenfranchise themselves, to say, you know what, I'm not going to show up at all. I'll vote for Jill Stein. You know, all of those votes, a lot of them were pushed by Russians who wanted people to just not vote for her. I think all of these things together worked together to make sure that the Electoral College put Donald Trump in office. But the main reason that he was able to overcome all of the statistical odds that said she should win, immigration. He picked on the one thing that always works in America, race. People hate these non-white immigrants so much that they would do anything to keep them out. Anything.
Yeah.
And that's why he's still popular with them.
It's amazing. And I guess there are people like me who never thought we were in this bad a situation. I didn't think the racial divide was this strong. I really, you know, I bought the party line. Obama was elected. We've evolved. We're beyond this now. We can move forward. And now we see, obviously, that wasn't the case at all. Joy Reid is with us. Joy, we've known each other for a long time. I use it as a badge of honor, saying that I actually beat you out for a job some years ago with Jim DeFede. But just figure, if you had gotten the job and not me, you may not be on MSNBC right now. So I guess things happen for a reason, right?
Amen. Well, no, I think we both worked out quite well.
Yeah, sort of. Anyway, I've been nice. I've been cordial. I got to ask you about a question. In the first chapter, I'm reading How Did Trump Happen, and you're going along and talking about the election and Hillary Clinton, and right off the bat, you go in for the kill with Bernie Sanders. Quote, Sanders, the independent senator and self-described Democratic socialist from Vermont who ran on the Democratic Party line but never signed up for party membership, supported Clinton after she defeated him in the primary, but barely hid his lack of enthusiasm? I'm sorry, Joy, I call bullshit. Sanders flew all over the country at her behest doing whatever was asked of him, and he was soundly pummeled for his troubles by people like you.
Well, the reality is, I covered the convention, at which the first night of the convention, Sanders basically demanded to have the first night of the convention directed toward him, which has never happened to a Democratic nominee. I won't name names, but there were people even inside his camp that felt like this was kind of a demand that had to do with his own, personal feelings about not winning the nomination, that he wasn't quite ready to be done. And I covered the campaign. I mean, the reality is that I know Sanders voters who are almost as devoted as Trump voters are to him don't want to ever hear anything negative about Bernie Sanders. But there were plenty of stories of those of us who covered the campaign about the reluctance of the Sanders campaign to fully buy into Clinton.
Okay.
Remember,
but he traveled the country at her behest. Once it was a done deal, he went all in and did whatever she asked of him. Now you're skipping over the fact that the DNC had it in. They decided that Hillary Clinton was going to be the nominee come hell or high water. It didn't matter what happened with Bernie Sanders. And granted, he didn't get as many votes as she did, and so she did win. But how much did the efforts of the DNC putting their finger on the scale have to do with it? Debbie Wasserman Schultz said out loud, Bernie Sanders will never be president. They decided that. They stacked the deck against him. Even Donna Brazile admitted to it. And that's something that I never hear you guys address, as he's constantly pummeled on MSNBC.
The reality is that, I don't know if you've ever paid much attention to the DNC. They're not that good at politics.
Oh, come on.
I mean, hold on a second. I'm just going to just tell you the data. Just look up any piece of data that you want. Take all of the DNC members and send them to another planet. Hillary Clinton would still win by something like 4
possibly
million votes.
It doesn't make what they did right.
Yes, it does. It does. I'm
no,
sorry.
It really
I'm just
doesn't.
Telling you, Nicole,
super delegates. You
I'm
think super delegates
you,
are okay?
On. I'm just going to tell you the data that if there were no DNC people, she would have won.
That's very
if
possible.
If the DNC people had been for, it's true. If
it's
there,
okay,
if
it's
the
very
DNC
possible.
People
then
had
why?
Been forced to
then,
vote. Wait, hold on.
Okay.
I mean, I can answer your question, or you can yell at me.
Go ahead.
If the DNC people had been forced to vote proportionally to the way that the electorate voted, she would have won. If the DNC had been forced to vote any way that the Sanders people would have asked, she would have won. Hillary Clinton simply won more votes. The DNC did not force 4 million people to vote for her than him. He just lost. And I think at the end of the day, his voters need to just accept she just got more votes.
Okay, and I agree with you, Joy.
That to happen.
I agree with you. She got more votes than he did. Does that excuse the way he and his campaign were treated by the DNC? You're saying it's okay. They decided ahead of time. Put the votes aside for a second. They decided ahead of time Hillary Clinton was going to be the nominee.
Put the votes aside.
I know,
you
but they
put the votes aside.
They stacked the deck
get
against
won
him.
By people voting.
Okay.
Put the votes aside.
Okay.
So what you're saying is that it doesn't matter how people voted. The DNC
I'm not saying that at all. I'm not saying that at all. The DNC
nothing
should not have
done.
Taken sides. The same way. Do you agree
the
with
DNC
the DNC?
Hold on. does the DNC tell you who to vote for? People voted for who they prefer.
Okay, we're getting nowhere with this. I will just say,
6% or more African American voters.
Oh God,
it's his job to win those voters. It's not the Democratic National Committee's job. Whatever their,
but it is their job to be neutral, Joy. It is their job to be neutral. They should be neutral in primaries.
I think our interview,
and they're not.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
I don't want to argue with you about Bernie Sanders. Have a nice day.
Bye. All right. Well, you know, I started out nice. She, you know, there are so many other things I wanted to say to her, but she was going to stick to her party line that the DNC acted fairly to Bernie Sanders. The DNC did not act fairly. The DNC put their fingers on the scale and decided that. That Hillary Clinton was going to be the nominee no matter what. Now, you know what? She may very well have been. She got more votes than he did. I'm not arguing that. I am arguing that the Democratic National Committee is supposed to be neutral. They're not supposed to take sides. They did take sides. And that's what I have a problem with. And I also have a problem with MSNBC constantly bad-mouthing one of the candidates. Obviously, I didn't get there because she decided the interview was over. Anybody want a book? Oh, my husband's calling. Hello, David Sloan, my husband, everyone. Hi.
What about the agreement before any vote, before a single vote was cast? What about the agreement that the DNC concluded with Hillary Clinton to coordinate their fundraising?
Yeah. Oh,
how
I didn't even get to that. Damn it. I totally missed out on that one. But it's true. The DNC and Hillary Clinton had a joint fundraising agreement before she got the nomination. It's already bullshit.
Before a single vote was cast.
You're absolutely right. How do you donate? NicoleSandler.com/donate. Yes, thank you. By the way, if anybody wants the book, first person to email me that says you want it and we'll make a donation to cover the postage, it's yours. So anyway. All right. Thank you, David. I wish I could have asked her about the, you know, if it's a corporate directive to not... you know, to speak badly of Bernie Sanders. Look, I was never a big Ed Schultz fan. Personally, I didn't like the man, but he said it, and he said it out loud that the that he was ordered when at NBC to not support or talk about Bernie Sanders favorably. You know, there were a number. Look, I wanted to be fair. I did a very nice, cordial, friendly interview with her up until. I thought it was time to go in for the kill. There's no way I'm going to sit here and let her say the DNC didn't put their finger on the scale. Yes, they did. She says that's okay. I say that's a problem. I don't know where else to go from here. you couldn't give me Joy's book if you included a year of her MSDNC salary. Yeah, and for that, MSNBC fired him. Ed Schultz was clear that the reason he left MSNBC is he was fired because he supported Bernie Sanders. MSNBC is owned by Comcast. Comcast, immediately when Joe Biden announced his candidacy, Comcast threw him a big high-dollar fundraiser. This is the problem with media in the Trump era. The problem isn't only that Fox is... state-run television by the Trump administration, but that, you know, they're influencing the election. They're putting their finger on the scale for their corporate overlord's preferred candidate. In this case, I guess it's Joe Biden. Someone is telling me that Joy Reid is a big Kamala Harris fan. Whatever. That's fine. That's her prerogative. What's not her prerogative is as someone who calls herself a journalist. Now, you know, why did my music stop? I see my speaker muted again. Damn it. I'm having so many technical problems. This is not okay. All right. Well, my music's not, here we go. Will this fix it? Here we go. I'm sorry. It's a good thing tomorrow's a holiday. By the way, I'm going to be playing music tomorrow. There will not be a live show tomorrow. There will be a podcast, however, and it will be my 4th of July musical salute. And I'll podcast it earlier in the day so you can use it for your 4th of July barbecue festivities. Anyway, problem with media in this day and age is the people with the microphones should not be the ones weighing in on who should be the next president or who shouldn't be. They should be objective arbiters of the news. And we still do not have an objective news media in this country. And it's sick. All right. CNN is saying Bernie Sanders is finished. Meanwhile, there's a brand new ABC News poll out today that has Bernie Sanders in second place, just 6 points behind Joe Biden. So you know what? It is so early. Nothing is set in stone. There's 11 more debates. There's a year and a half to go. So take your Bernie's done and shove it up your ass. Is that clear enough? Joy Reid, you can go fuck off. There, I said it. Okay, I wish I would have said it to her. I'll see you guys Friday. We'll be back with a live show Friday. Don't forget the podcast tomorrow. Thanks for listening, everyone. And I hope you weren't offended.